Welcome back to The Sower, a podcast of the Ciceronian Society. We publish weekly in audio on all platforms and occasionally in video on our YouTube channel. We are an interdisciplinary group of Christian scholars dedicated to the study of tradition, place, and things divine. To learn more about us, visit ciceroniansociety.org. Please also check out our other podcast, Cicero on Duties, published in video format every Wednesday on our YouTube channel. I'm Chris Annadale, podcast editor for the Society. I also teach philosophy at the college and high school level in Emmitsburg, Maryland. This episode revives a series that began 2 years ago and ran from April to November 2024. In a series of Sower episodes, I interviewed different people about their places, the value they attached to them, and the stories of how they came to be there. My guest today to discuss his home in Plant City, Florida, is my friend Jeff Bristol. He is an independent scholar and lawyer who's been a regular at Ciceronian Society conferences. His popular writings range from policy and military essays to cultural criticism, with a focus on general anthropological theory and legal and political philosophy as applied to American life. His degrees include an AA in Persian Farsi from the Defense Languages Institute, a BA in History, Anthropology, Languages from the now defunct Marlborough College, an MA in Middle Eastern Studies from the University of Chicago, a JD from the University of Michigan Law School, and a PhD in Anthropology from Boston University, and he now lives in Plant City, Florida. Jeff, welcome to The Sower.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. It's great to be here.
Well, I just about ran out of breath reciting all the degrees. I did not realize that you had five or more degrees, including one from a college that has passed on.
Yeah, it's it's too bad about that. We could spend a lot of time talking about Marlborough College and place and what happened to it. Maybe that'll be a different episode. I often thought that it would be, it was kind of an interesting little school. It was very, it was kind of one of those progressive schools that was founded in the 40s and 50s, progressive in an educational philosophy. And it was very, very self student government oriented. And one of those, just one of the best liberal arts schools, I think, that was around. And then, you know, the problem with that is, I think a little bit like communities, kind of talking about small communities, is that, you know, they only last as long as the people are able to maintain them. And, you know, right. I think, you know, a lot of culture passes away, and that's kind of ultimately what happened there. But, you know, I also always warn people, you know, I'm actually not a very good student. And your ability of being a student is disproportionately low compared to, I don't know, maybe your academic predilection, your punishment will be an eternity of degrees.
Wow. Yeah, that's a JD, a PhD, everything, man. That it does seem like at some point either you escape from school, or it sort of pulls you into its orbit, and then you end up, you know, just spending the entire rest of your career either as a student or God help you as a professor.
That's right.
Well, I wanted to talk in this episode to sort of begin by talking about Plant City, Florida, and what makes it unique as a place, its character, its attraction, and maybe also the story of what brought you to Plant City as your place, how long you've been there. And we'll sort of generally expand to talk more about the theme of place, especially in American life today, maybe especially for people our age. Why don't you go ahead?
Yeah, that's great. Well, thanks, Chris. Yeah, so it's funny, you know, this is actually a great time to talk about Plant City, because tomorrow begins the Great Plant City event. You know, New Orleans has Mardi Gras, which is also a great event. My family's actually originally from New Orleans, been there since before the Civil War. But, you know, Tampa has Gasparilla, which is kind of its own little pirate parade. Plant City has the Strawberry Festival. So this is actually the winter strawberry capital of the United States. I think it's like 80%, normally about 80% of the strawberries consumed in between, you know, January and I guess probably April or May in the United States come from this area. Maybe a little less this year because we had some actually freezing weather a couple of weeks ago that decimated the strawberry crop, unfortunately. But, you know, it's pretty neat. There's the Strawberry Festival. It's about a week long. And it's gotten pretty big. They have a lot of, you know, like country western kind of acts and stuff. And, you know, it's, I think it's the county fair circuit, you know, so it's like the 12th iteration of the Temptations and, you know, so on. But, you know, it ends with a big Strawberry Day parade. And so, I mean, that's really, I think, One of the main things Plant Cities is known for is the strawberries, and then the railroads, which
Okay.
it's actually Plant City is named after H.B. Plant, who there was in the history of Florida, there were basically two magnates that created Florida as a vacation destination in the 19th and very early 20th centuries. Those were Henry Flagler and Henry Plant, and they kind of divided the state among them. So Flagler got the East Coast, and so Flagler University is in Flagler's old hotel in St. Augustine, and then Flagler built all the way down into Key West, and Plant got the West Coast, and so the hotel that's now the University of Tampa was Plant's kind of like flagship place in Tampa, and then Plant City was kind of like a railroad crossroads. So it's actually kind of nice. It's every maybe three two or three times a day, I'm at the right distance from the tracks that I hear the whistle. Which is nice, but I'm not so close that it's deafening.
I'd not thought about Plant City being named after Mr. Plant, but of
Yeah,
course
I
that
don't think a
makes
lot of people
perfect
know it.
sense.
It's yeah, it's kind of an interesting thing, but it's it's neat. It's definitely got its own character. It's very small. My wife, who's actually from rural Pennsylvania, I'm from Florida. I was actually born in Tampa. I grew up in Jacksonville, and then I spent a lot of time outside of the state. I joined the Army when I was 18. And then I embarked on my epic educational career. That was a little bit broken up by working for the US government for a little bit again and as a civilian. But, I had a real, during my PhD program, I had a real kind of soul searching that I had to do. I'd always planned on doing a JD PhD because my expertise in anthropology is legal and political anthropology. And I figured it would make me more competitive on the market. And often you can get the JD paid for by the PhD program. So some schools do that arrangement. But I realized that for a variety of reasons, about halfway through my program, anthropology was probably not going to be a good future for me academically. Just the politics, the discipline, my military background, my interests were not really aligned with the interests of the discipline either. So then I decided to become, I thought I'd be a legal academic, get my JD and teach. And then I discovered in the legal academy that one, I don't like it very much. And two, I'm really an anthropologist. So, I kind of said, well, I guess I need to practice. And so when I did that, I said, the nice thing was that I could come home. And essentially, most of my family had relocated to Tampa. And so we initially wound up in Tampa, but during kind of that earlier peregrination, my wife and I, we lived in Fredericksburg, Virginia for a little while. And I don't know that I can really say that there are a lot of absolute similarities between Plant City and Fredericksburg, but both Fredericksburg's obviously a lot older than Plant City, but both kind of have an older kind of structure, where there's a nice downtown, it's manageable, the buildings are all a couple stories tall. It's very walkable. And we just really liked that. And so we kind of selected Plant City to be our home, and then we embarked on what ended up being a full 2-year process between buying the lot and eventually getting the house built. But we've done that, and so we're actually kind of new Plant Cityans. We've only been in our house for a few months now, but we've gotten to know the town. My wife homeschools; she's taken our kids here, regularly while we were building. And then I actually wound up with a kind of an unusual arrangement where I there's two courthouses in Hillsborough County. One downtown, and then the East County Courthouse, which is in Plant City. And it handles only misdemeanors. And for about a year and a half, I had a contract with the public defender, the elected public defender, where I handled all of the East County criminal cases, all misdemeanors. So I got to know at least an interesting side of Plant City from that. There's a little dive bar down the road, the Strawberry Patch, where I am not sure whether people there would buy me a drink or drive me out with pool cues. I think people might be inclined to do both depending on who they are and how I handled their case. But yeah, I mean it's a great little town.
That's excellent. That sounds like even the setup for a movie, a version of What About Bob or Groundhog Day. You get to know the town through the being associated with the folks at the courthouse first.
Yeah, I mean it's a good way of getting to know places. You definitely get to know either where to go or where not to go, depending on your perspective.
Let me ask, as a non-Floridian, let me ask you a question about Florida. You mentioned moving between different parts of Florida. Is there sort of a general Florida identity and people sort of move freely between them, or is there kind of an East Coast, West Coast divide, or is each part have its own kind of little local pride that you move between? Do you understand what I'm asking?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, I mean, it's a great question, particularly because, being in New England, and I spent a lot of time in New England, a lot of people and the Midwest too, I think both places have a very strong view of Florida. And I think they kind of, the perception is the entire state is Disneyland. I would get a lot of pushback when I would say I was from Florida. They said, well, you're not really from Florida. It's like, well, I grew up there. I was born there. And people are like, well, where's your parents from? Where are your parents from? I said, well, New Orleans. And they're like, I gotcha. But, the thing is, I mean, I know people who, Tampa was formed by one of the founders of Tampa was a guy named James McKay. He was a Scottish sailor who came in on a tall ship and basically helped found the city in the 1850s. He was the first one to really use the port. One of our clients and a friend of my law partners and mine is his, I don't know, great, 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 great grandkid. So there are definitely people who've been in Florida for a long time. I would say the real identity divide in Florida is between Northern Floridians and Southern Floridians. And so I will often say I'm a Northern Floridian. And that's kind of, I think you could, it's ironic. A lot of people say Florida is the only state where the further north you go, the further south you get. And that's
I can see
because
that.
Miami and Southern Florida, I mean, they definitely have a strong, agricultural tradition and really a Southern tradition. If you get back into the country, there's a lot of actual cowboys who do cattle drives and whatnot on horses, like around Lake Okeechobee. But for the most part, it's more urban, it's more retirees, it's more people who've moved down from up north. Alternatively, up north, it's a lot more Southerners, and people who have kind of a very strong identity that way. I was joking with, I'm trying to remember who it was the other day. I saw a friend of mine who's not from around here, but his parents are snowbirds in Naples. And I was kind of reflecting on this. So it was funny that he brought it up. He talked to our, I think they kind of moved around a lot, but I think they're from Iowa originally, in Naples complaining about the snowbirds. And I told Evan, I said, I think my test of knowing whether you're a real Floridian or not has become whether you can complain about Yankees with a straight face. If you could say something like that beach is full of Yankees and not smile about it, and also I think be someone that someone complains about the Yankees too, because you don't want to complain about Yankees in front of the Yankees. So I mean it definitely has its own character, and I think though there is a divide a little even between that, and North Florida is really what I know better, between say Jacksonville, which is really a lot like Southern Georgia, and so usually the way I kind of put it is people when you say you're from somebody's state, if you're not really from there, they'll push you on it and be like, yeah, you're not really from Georgia. And I always tell people, I say I'm from Georgia, and I'm from like the one place outside of Georgia that nobody would argue with me about. And they're always like, where's that? And I say, Jacksonville. They're like, yeah, Jacksonville's pretty much Georgia. And the panhandle is very similar to Alabama. And so, there's a little bit of a divide there. But, and it kind of comes down to Plant City. Plant City is pretty southern. I think when you start to get a little further south, then it gets to be a little bit more of a cosmopolitan mix of people from the Caribbean and then, people often from New York. There's a very tight Miami, New York corridor. To a point where salaries in Miami reflect salaries in New York. And I think that's partly because people move between the two. Tampa is very unusual. It's kind of an outlier, and I think separate from the rest of Florida, in part because it is highly cosmopolitan. It was the original port to Cuba. And that's, why it had all the cigar factories. We never grew to tobacco does not grow in Florida, but they rolled a lot of cigars there because that's where the tobacco came in. And as a result, it is very heavily Italian and Cuban, very heavily Italian and Cuban because the Sicilian immigrants came in and then also Peninsular Spanish. So there's like a weird mix between Spaniards, Cubans, and some Puerto Ricans, and then Italians. So, like a guy I had lunch with, another lawyer, a couple of weeks ago. This is the perfect Tampa law firm. One of the partners is Sam Higginbottom, good English name, and the other one is Gino Budo. And Gino Budo is, third generation American, but in Tampa, that's the way it goes. There's a guy who tried to infiltrate Tampa society a little while ago, and he was caught. He was actually a sex offender and failed to register, but he'd kind of reinvented himself and had become friends with the neighbor and ingratiated with everyone, himself with everyone. And the name he chose as the most perfect Tampa name was Giovanni Ficarino.
He thought he could blend right in.
Well, and he did. He
Yeah,
did for
yeah.
years. Everyone thought that he was just a Tampa guy. And that's, it's funny. There's a lot of great, in Tampa, a lot of great mob tours. And that's partly because of that Italian connection. There was a very strong, mafia presence in Tampa. In Goodfellas, the scene where they hold the guy over the lion pit, there are no lions there anymore, but that actually happened in Lowry Park Zoo in Tampa. And so it's funny because you come out to Plant City, and so Plant City does actually have a Cuban presence, although you wouldn't expect it. It has historically been kind of much more Anglo, although now, of course, it's very heavily Central American because of the farm workers. So that's kind of a changing aspect of the whole community around here.
Yeah, I have another demographic question for you. I know Florida politics has changed a good deal in the past decade or from a decade ago, but tell me about the geographic balance within the state. Is Miami or a couple of other large urban centers large enough that they dominate state politics and the interests of small towns like Plant City get crowded out? Or is there kind of a rough regional balance in the legislature and in the state political affairs?
I would say it's much more balanced, and I think that's often true of southern states in general, and I think western states. I think states that were historically agricultural tend to be a little more balanced. It's funny you mentioned that Plant City has actually for the last 8 or 9 years punched very far above its weight in terms of politics. We have I think the proudest resident of Plant City is a woman by the name of Ashley Moody, who was our attorney general for a long time, and then now is our senator. Will be up for election. She was appointed by DeSantis. So when you come in, there's big signs, Plant City, home of Ashley Moody. And the Moodys are a very a local dynasty, you might say. Her brother is a judge on the circuit court, state court. Her father is a federal court judge. I think her grandfather was also a circuit judge, very prominent attorneys in the area. So, Florida is funny because, like most of these southern states, it has not historically had really deep urban concentrations. And so, I mean, that's changing a little bit, but not really that much because people want cheap housing. And so that tends not to be in the cities, especially nowadays. So, you have, it's like Tampa tends to be blue historically, and it still is. Miami used to be very blue, but was kind of a, Jewish conservative New York kind of Democrat, so it's a little different. And then Tampa or Jacksonville, the third big city, which Jacksonville is really the industrial part of Florida. It has a number of plants. CSX, the railroad company, is headquartered there. That has historically been very red, but is actually kind of turning blue. But Florida has always kind of had a balance between the newcomer politics, which you see that emblematic. Kind of emblematic now in the Villages, which is a very kind of hardcore Trump retirement community, and the deeper, more entrenched kind of Florida establishment. But it's funny, like there is a deeper entrenched Florida establishment of people who've been here for multiple generations, like the Moodies, but the politics is still pretty open. So there are people who move to the state and then run for important offices, shortly after doing it. But, Florida's politics have changed a lot, and I maybe are in some ways emblematic of kind of national politics. They are very different than they used to be. In the past, the statewide offices, Florida as a purple state, was always a little bit of a misnomer. The statewide offices tended to be purple, but the legislature tended to be Republican. I think there are a variety of reasons for that. Yeah, now we're kind of going through the DeSantis era, which is kind of a huge question. What comes after that? I think that's kind of the big question for Florida politics now.
Right, this is an election year for the governor's office, isn't it?
Yeah, it
Yeah.
is. Yeah.
So we'll
And
find out.
well, we will. You know, I mean, DeSantis doesn't really have a successor. He kind of started to appoint a guy named Collins. I think Collins, I've heard Collins speak. I will be honest, I don't think he's not that charismatic a speaker. He's got a very compelling backstory. You know, he lost a leg. He was a Green Beret, lost his leg in Afghanistan. But he just, I think other people find him that way. He hasn't been able to raise money. So I think DeSantis kind of bet on him, then realized Collins probably wasn't going to be able to carry it. You know, Trump has backed Donalds. You know, there's a little bit of uncertainty between Trump and DeSantis. I think Donalds will probably win, but it'll be kind of an open question what DeSantis does next.
Yeah. Well, let me get back to the idea of this kind of entrenched in local families. There's local families everywhere, of course, and I might say the places where there aren't are places that have just been completely swamped by newcomers for a couple of generations, where they just all the old order of things has been perhaps washed away. What's been your experience, sort of over the past 2 years, sort of being on the process of getting to Plant City and now finally arriving? It sounds like you're on good terms with all the locals, with maybe a few exceptions, you know, down at the Strawberry Patch. But what's been the sort of feel that you've gotten from it? Is it welcoming? Is it tolerant? Is it, what do you say?
Oh, hugely welcoming. You know, hugely welcoming. I think within 2 weeks I basically knew all the neighbors. Yeah, I mean, one of the things that really strikes me about Plant City is so our next neighbor is a perfect example. Is kind of they built a couple of fab homes on either side of us while we were building this. And only one of them has been occupied. And it was actually occupied by a couple that moved one street over. And they moved one street over because they wanted to give their home to their kids. So, and again, my understanding with Moody, Jamie Moody, who's Ashley Moody's brother, is I think he actually lives in his grandmother's house.
Wow.
So then those are not the only groups of people that I know. Our neighbor behind us, I mean, I think his parents live a few blocks away. There's many, many, many people who do this kind of house swap, which intergenerational house swap, which I mean is really great. I mean, it really creates this deep, nice community. People care about the town. They have not been standoffish. They've been actually very welcoming for us coming in. And you know, I so you know, it's interesting though because Florida, I kind of talk about this. Florida in general, it's very old-fashioned. You know, I mean, it's not. I mean, it is conservative, but it is rural Florida and even Jacksonville, which was not rural at all, but always kind of seems like maybe a decade behind things in terms of, and that's not just like all the trends come 10 years late, but I think there's a. When you get outside of some of the subdivisions, and I think people would be surprised to hear this about Florida, but I mean, there is a lot of inertia, cultural inertia, and continuity that moves through things. So, you know, it's a kind of a great place for people who are interested in tradition, you know, to be in and to kind of experience.
Yeah, I want to ask you another question. I think I've asked previous guests in this series about this. Just drawing on my own experience, living for a while in rural Missouri, living in rural Maryland, traveling through rural Pennsylvania, which has some of the same type of things with older settlements, but very small ones, also ones that have kind of a local character. There seems to be a tension between local ident preserving historical identity and attracting commerce. And in some places, especially up in Appalachia, the commerce is just gone, and you know, the prospects economically have fallen, and so you have your culture, but all the young people are leaving. You can't sort of sustain it. So, where do you see that balance struck, either in Plant City or in other small communities in Florida? That perhaps the Strawberry Festival has kind of solved that problem for Plant City.
Well, Florida doesn't have that problem. In some sense, we have the opposite problem because we have too many people coming in. But this was something else I was going to say that's kind of interesting about Plant City. And I don't know if this is true of, I think it is true of other smaller cities like Plant City. There is a very subdivision mania or subdivisionism, I don't know exactly what to call it, in people who move to Florida. They like to move to subdivisions. And I find it very funny because, the subdivisions always have HOAs. And I have met a couple of people who like HOAs. 98% of people hate HOAs. But yet they seem to be drawn to buying houses in HOAs. And I don't know whether that's because they're cheaper in HOAs or, I have this maybe a bit of an outside theory, but I kind of think that, I think Americans, we have kind of a fraught relationship with liberty, like we like it, but then, we spend all of our childhood in public education or, private education schools that are very regimented. And then, we create regimented routines in college, and then we get a job with an employer that's highly bureaucratic and regimented, where we work for 8 hours a day. So I think we like the idea of liberty, but we often don't actually live in liberty. So I wonder if sometimes it's like, well, the HOA is just another person who tells me what to do. So I'm used to that. But the reason I bring it up is, there's lots of subdivisions, too many subdivisions, to be honest with you. I think most Floridians are kind of like, people should go back. But so there's a lot of development that happens around Plant City. But if you walk, like when I walk my dog, there's tons of empty lots in Plant City, and like I said, I think that's true of a lot of other cities in the small towns in the state. I think people come down, and part of it is, part of it is some of these subdivisions go up in places that I don't even understand. It's like Pasco County, for example, which is north of us, is a very rural county. And they have subdivisions. They built, a subdivision. You'll have a subdivision of 500 houses, and the nearest grocery store is 30 miles away, because they just plop the subdivision in the middle of nowhere where they could buy the land. And I think people don't really understand the state, maybe partly, and so that's where there are a lot of houses to buy. And so maybe people are just attracted there because they can buy the houses. Maybe they're cheaper. I mean, because you can. There's just 500 available. You can move in quickly. You don't have to wait for a house to be built. But a lot of the consequence of that is there's a lot of development that happens around places like Plant City. And then Plant City itself grows. I mean, those people come into the town. But, like I said, I mean, I'm looking out my window and I see several empty lots, that could be built on. But they don't. So it's kind of a Yeah, Florida has the opposite problem. It is getting overwhelmed, but there are kind of weird pockets like this that, remain, truly little communities.
Yeah, I wonder if that has something to do with attitudes towards community. Of course, people who would choose to live downtown, or buy a lot, a small lot, build on it, would want a certain kind of community or value it, or at least not be afraid of it. There's something safe about the subdivision. There's also something generic about it that probably looks just like subdivisions in out you know in Nevada or in Omaha or wherever else. I wonder if part of it also is I mentioned before the safety, right? That I would like free I would like my freedom, but I also like to defend myself from your freedom. And the HOA is the compromise there. I saw somebody there was a quip but stuck in my memory about farm subsidies that originated. Some wit said, because every farmer likes the fact that he can produce more crops, but he doesn't like the fact that other farmers can produce more crops. And so we need to have somebody has to come in and from the government and deal with that. So perhaps the HOA is a sort of similar kind of origin. People are more afraid of the result of freedom than they're anticipating using it beneficially themselves. What do you think?
No, I think that's a great observation. It reminds me, what was it? Now I got to think back to my comps. There's a great American sociologist who did research on wrote about it was a community in Connecticut and how this was in the 50s, conflict resolution among suburbanites essentially, and kind of talking about how Americans are kind of can be conflict averse. Although they want to regulate everybody. And so, I mean, I could see that, the HOA gives you a neutral entity that in theory everybody has equal access to. Whereas here, I mean, so we live across the street from a great park. I'll give you the view for the people on YouTube. We could turn it around and see, that's there's a library just across the street from that park. And so one of the things that we liked about the park was We have a 4-year-old and 6-year-old, and they could go out there, and we have a lot of windows on the side of the house, so I can see them from my study. My wife can see them from the kitchen, and so, it gives them a chance to go somewhere where they can be alone, and exercise some independence, but we can also watch them. I think one of the prices of the density of the United States is obviously this homeless issue. I think there are always homeless people. We usually call them hermits or recluses, and they lived out in the woods, away from civilization. There really are no woods away from civilization anymore. The woods are in towns, so they tend to occupy wooded spaces or parks. And so, I mean, they're not bad because the Plant City Police sit there because this is in the middle of the town and make sure that they don't stay very long. But still, people get a little nervous about them, and so I have had many people come to me and say, shouldn't let your sons go out and play in the park. And I think one time there was a 12-year-old boy, and my son was my oldest of six was playing out in the park, and the 12-year-old boy came up to him and kind of, I could hear him when I had my window open because it was a nice day, and kind of ushered him out of the park, and said, "Your parents don't, you're not supposed to be here." And so, that I can see how the idea, I'm in an anonymous subdivision, I'm not going to have anybody tell me what to do. The flip side is that if they got in trouble out there or something, I know that there would be people watching. So, I mean, I can kind of understand that, but I mean, that is the nature of a community. I mean, it's annoying. I would like my kids to play without them coming up and telling me about it. On the other hand, everybody waves to me when I walk down the sidewalk. I know people are watching out for them. I mean, that's kind of the balance that you have. You can have perfect autonomy and perfect privacy, but then you can't have a community.
But similar experience perhaps I've had. My kids are teenagers and older now, but they've grown up in the small town that we've lived in for the past 15 years and more. And my wife and I both came from subdivisions in the suburbs. And it's my hope is that my kids will have a different memory of community than perhaps I had. There are things that I could do that they can't do, but there's plenty of things available, including a park right behind the house that and friends and a lot of other things within walking distance downtown that are important to us. So it's some of it seems like a broad cultural change, right? The suspicion, the remember maybe remember back in the 80s and 90s, the paranoia about poison and Halloween candy and aspirins and whatnot, and anonymous strangers just maliciously reaching out through ordinary life to harm you and your loved ones somehow.
Right. And we've given up on that. We know that our children would definitely get in the van with strangers with candy. I think they've done studies that every kid does, but ours definitely would. So there's no training them out of
Okay.
that.
Some of it also is, yeah, it's training people to live with a certain kind of community life and to have certain kinds of expectations. I wonder if the enemy to be overcome is the kind of generic, sort of out of the box subdivision ideal. I'm not quite sure what the attraction that has is. Having sort of broken that attraction myself, I don't know what it still retains for people apart from perhaps that it's cheaper, it's easier to understand, more convenient. It doesn't involve as much sort of advance legwork to understand the community before you select it. Do you know other people who are thinking about moving to Plant City based upon your example and testimony?
No. In fact, because Plant City, I mean, Plant City, I am in a, my network tends to be very Floridian. So everybody kind of already knows Tampa and Plant City. So it's actually kind of funny. When I got the, when I got the contract to do the cases of Plant City, I actually had lunch with Julie Holt, who was the public defender, the elected public defender at the time. She'd been the public defender for, I don't know, 20 or 30 years. She retired a couple years ago. And, we were sitting, and I got the job because I said, "Hey, do you want any help? I was a public defender. I'd like to get in the court more. I'd like to, help out." And, they're always short staffed, so I said, "If you want to give me cases on contract," a lot of places do that. A lot of places that don't have a large public defender's office, they just contract out local attorneys to handle the work. And she said, "Well, we've never done that before, but might be interested. Why don't we have lunch?" And so, we sat down to lunch, and she said, "Well, what do you want to do?" And I said, "Well, I don't know. What do you need help with?" And she said, "Well, I've got a real problem out in Plant City." And I said, well, that's funny you should mention that because, we just bought a lot. We just bought the lot. I said, we just bought a lot in Plant City. We're going to be building a house out there. And the look that she gave me, she's definitely a South Tampa person. South Tampa is kind of like the nexus of Tampa. It is historically where all of the nice places in Tampa are. Plant High School is, if you don't go to Jesuit, then Plant High School is like Jesuit or Academy of Holy Names, depending on if you're a boy or girl. Then Plant High School is the school you want to go to. And so she gave me this look like, I didn't realize that your parents were related. It's kind of a look like that. Like,
Wow.
like, why would you want to do that? Why would anyone want to move to Plant City? So it definitely, and we've met people in Tampa that say, oh yeah, I grew up from Plant City, but then I wanted to move somewhere where there was more stuff going on, which I can kind of understand, Plant City has some nice bars. They close at 7 o'clock during the week and at 11 o'clock at night on the weekends. So I mean, it is not a happen and boom in place. But I think in this area, especially among my network, there are Plant City people, and then there are Tampa people, and they've kind of settled where they are, and because they have it has a Tampa has a very strong sense of place, just as Plant City does. And they're kind of settled where they are and then in their respective zones.
Yeah, makes sense. Just knowing, where does St. Petersburg come in with Tampa identity? Is it a rival? Is it like a Twin Cities sort of thing, or is it got a totally it's totally own thing?
It is very different. It's very different. It's kind of one of those, and ne'er the twain shall meet, kind of a situation, and I've worked a little bit in St. Pete. My brothers live in St. Pete. It is culturally, demographically very different. So it is Tampa is blue, Paul, politically, but culturally still fairly conservative. The Democrats do the lip service to many progressive causes, but I don't know how much real heart there is in the Tampa Democrats for that. Like Mayor Castor, she's gay herself, but I mean, she's not waving the pride flag. St. Pete is very different. St. Pete is very culturally progressive. I think there are many fewer native St. Petersburg folks over there than there are native Tampanos. It is a more of a retirement community. That being said, one of the things that I kind of, a little regret I had about Tampa. I don't think this is that big a deal though, because in our age, everybody's so connected. If I want the Met Opera, I can listen. I mean, you could always listen on Saturday whenever you wanted, but I could listen anytime I want if I want opera. If I want, art, I can look it up online or I can look it up in my books. But Tampa's cultural scene is not maybe as sophisticated as one might like. St. Petersburg is extremely sophisticated, maybe a little too sophisticated sometimes. Like they have the MFA's pretty good over there. They have a great Baroque collection that's going on right now, exhibition. They have many other museums. They just opened a Museum of Western Art there. So it has a very different, they do a lot of festivals, a lot of music festivals there, but it also has culturally a very different kind of feel. It's also a lot more African American. There's a lot more black presence in the city. I mean, Tampa has a lot of African Americans, but I think they're not as prominent in the city as they are in St. Petersburg.
Yeah, th thanks for answering that. It's something I know nothing about Florida apart from some basic geography, but it seems like one of the lessons I've learned here is that, in living in Florida, you've got a great a great deal about the demographics, the politics, the history of all the different places, including your own. That seems like that's an important part of actually inhabiting a place, sort of, mentally as well as just materially and physically.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, and Florida is weird because it's so dynamic, there's constantly people coming and going. It's constantly reinventing and re-identifying itself, and so it's kind of it can sometimes be a little bewildering to figure out who's where and who's doing what, just because there are so many different kinds of people that keep coming and keep going, and places reinvent themselves so frequently. Like St. Petersburg is a great example of that. I think until about 2010, every census since 1950 had had a flat demographic growth. That's because there were as many people who were born in St. Petersburg that left and never came back as retirees flowing into it. And so, I mean, like their school system was just shot for a long time because retirees do not want their property taxes spent on schools because the attitude tends to be, my kids already went to school. I don't need to fund the education of other people's kids. And so there are a lot of Florida schools in heavy retirement areas, public schools that are very underfunded and are very bad as a result. That has totally changed since 2010. The growth, population growth of St. Petersburg exploded, and the whole city's become very young, and the schools have started to get revitalized. So there are kind of these cycles that come and go that can be a little bewildering, but I don't know. It either makes it both an interesting and a frustrating state to live in.
Yeah, I certainly believe that. I mean, it looks like it could, both in terms of population and geography, e easily be two or three states,
Yeah, I think you're right. And it's funny because, the other place that I think of as home, although I don't really personally have any right to call it home, is, as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, New Orleans. And I mean, I've never lived there, but I visited it often enough growing up. And since I've been here, I've been trying to make it back there more frequently. And, New Orleans is funny because New Orleans is kind of the opposite. It is it had a little bit of a boom after Katrina, but it is kind of very even keeled as far as movement. It's probably one of the most hard to break in cities in the United States. It's very isolated. It's very kind of it's funny, anytime I tell people my family's from New Orleans, this is the only major city in the United States that I have ever heard anybody do this. They always ask me who my family is. Which
Really?
it's actually my mother's family. I don't know really anyone on my dad's side of the family. It's my mother's family I'm close to. So they're actually not Bristols. But yeah, but they're always like, so who is it? Who what are the last names? Because there's just not a lot of movement in and out. And since, I would say since probably the early 20th century, there hasn't been a lot of economic vitality really in the city either. And so it's very static. And so it kind of makes an interesting contrast between the two.
Well, I know there's talk of the demographics of Florida changing. I mean, the influx of Cubans was, of course, decades ago, and that's been sort of thoroughly assimilated into the state, I'm certain. But there were people, leaving 5 years ago because of COVID policies and tax policies. And I think even Mr. Trump changed his residency between his first and second campaigns from New York to Florida, didn't he? So,
That's
meaning
right.
he couldn't meaning he couldn't run on the same ticket with DeSantis, I recall.
That's right. That's funny. There were a lot of people. I met a lot of people who, when I informed that fact of the 12th Amendment, that were some of them were very elated and some of them were very upset when they found out about that. Turns out there's not a lot of knowledge of the 12th Amendment around the United States. But yeah, I mean, it's funny. Also, note where Trump moved to. He didn't move to Northern Florida. He moved to Southern Florida, which is the New York connection, and so that makes a certain amount of sense. Yeah, and it's funny because there's a lot of other movements that I think people really wouldn't notice as much. Again, especially in Plant City, the thing that I notice so much is the Central Americans, just because one this I don't want to say Tampa is different than Jacksonville. Growing up in Jacksonville and Northern Florida, nobody spoke Spanish. No Spanish speakers. And they've obviously become more notable there. But then even here, it was all Cubans. So, like all the lunch spots I go to when I have lunch with friends, they're all Cuban spots. They're all Cuban restaurants. But especially here, there's so many Central Americans now that, it really highlights the difference. Obviously the diversity of the United States, but also kind of the difference in the kinds of communities that are around us, because Central Americans are very different than Cubans. They are. They are not the same at all. They have very different mannerisms. They listen to different music. They're interested in different things. It's very different. And so and then obviously their roots are a lot are shallower. One of the funny things about this area, but especially Tampa, and this is very different than Miami, is you'll have somebody whose name might be Arturo Gonzalez, and or Arturo Fernandez, we'll say, and he speaks no Spanish whatsoever. And then you might have somebody like me who speaks great Spanish, you know? And that's just because of the weird, you know, people have been here for so long, you know, and but Spanish is maintained. So there's some people who maybe left the Cuban community largely. So they have the name, but they don't really deal with a lot of Cubans, never did. So they lost the language. And then other people who maybe deal a lot with the Cuban community, and even though they're Anglos, speak Spanish well because of that. So.
I can imagine there was something similar happened with Italian immigrants, a century or so ago. I was
Yeah,
wondering.
well, and even still here, there was a guy for a long time when I was living in South Tampa. I went to this barber shop, and he was a second or third generation Tampano, and he was probably born in the 50s. And one day I heard him speaking Italian to one of his customers, and I kind of asked him about it. He was like, "Yeah, well, I just spoke Italian growing up. My Italian's not great, but I still speak it, you know, because he grew up in Ybor City, you know, speaking Italian with all Sicilians. We have
Nice.
our own pizza." People will argue about whether it's pizza. It's called cicada. It's like a kind of a focaccia bread with like a cold kind of meat sauce, marinara tomato meat sauce on top with kind of baked in cheese.
I'll have to check it out sometime. It's
Yep.
good to know. Well, let me ask you sort of we'll wrap this up in a closing question. You mentioned the Strawberry Festival. If people were going to come to Plant City, is that the time to come, late February?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the big thing. You know, I would you know, I guess I was gonna say I don't know what other major attractions there are in Plant City other than the Strawberry Festival. I got my kids are in the other room, so I've managed to keep the secret from them. So I gotta say it a little quietly. We are about 45 minutes away from Disneyland.
Okay.
So, you know, I mean, that's obviously you have theme park Floridians and non-theme park Floridians. I am a non-theme park Floridian. You know, I think
Gotcha.
other than a couple weeks ago for a law conference, I hadn't been on Disney property since I don't know, probably like 92.
Wow.
But for Plant City itself, I would say, yeah, the Strawberry Festival. I mean, it's a great example of the community. I mean, it draws all the musical acts, obviously. But you know, they've started to do a Hispanic Day. You know, where they do a lot of Hispanic acts. You know, they have obviously all the strawberry stuff, but it's kind of funny. It's like, you know, people are real local notables because they're on the Strawberry Festival board. I think that's kind of like the main way of knowing that you're somebody in Plant City. I mean, I think they have the grounds of the Strawberry Festival, I think, are probably almost the same size as the downtown itself. You know,
Wow.
it's a huge, huge operation. Our church, which I go to St. Clement's Catholic Church. We do every year, we do a strawberry shortcake booth. That's kind of the big thing, is the strawberry shortcake. And I think we had 550 volunteer slots to man that booth. Last year, I think they raised about $200,000.
Oh my gosh,
I think
wow.
total. And then I think the church made about 125 on it, and they paid off their mortgage last year from it. So yeah, I mean, it's like a it is an operation.
That's amazing. That's great. Well, I'll put a link to it in the show notes, the description for this episode, so people can check it out. Certainly going to be too late for it if it starts tomorrow for 2026, but perhaps 2027 and beyond.
Yeah, that would be great, Chris. I think that's a great idea.
That's great. Thanks so much for being on the Sower today, Jeff. This has been a look at Plant City with my friend Jeff Bristol, a regular at the Ciceronian Society. And someone I hope I'll see in a couple of weeks at our annual conference in Omaha, Nebraska. You've been listening to The Sower, a podcast of the Ciceronian Society. To learn more about us and our programs, to sign up for a newsletter, please go to ciceroniansociety.org. It's our hope that you will subscribe to this podcast, perhaps share it with a friend, come back and look at some of the other content that we're offering on our different media channels. Thanks so much for listening. Goodbye.